Welcome to El Ten and John's La Liga Weekly. Ladies and gentlemen, I have a new career plan. I'm going to become a billionaire. After all, Peter Lim's a billionaire and he gives off every impression of being a blithering idiot. Valencia were battling against relegation when he was persuaded to hire Marcelino. Two Champions League qualifications later, they fall out because the coach wants to win the Copa del Rey. Yes, he wants to win a football competition. Peter was only interested in Champions League qualification. Winning stuff is for losers in the mindset of a billionaire. They won the cup, they finished fourth, and he sacked Marcelino anyway and replaced him, oddly enough, with a bloke represented by his favourite agent, George Mendes. What could possibly go wrong? Barcelona 5, Valencia 2. That was the first time Los Jay have conceded 5 goals since Peter last got involved and football genius that he is, appointed Gary Neville as the Valencia coach. Better news then for Barca, who won handsomely with a goal and an assist from young Fatty before old Fatty came off the bench and got two. Sorry, that was uncalled for. I unreservedly withdraw that remark. Real Madrid won. Florentino Perez delighted that this week he's not the billionaire who knows the least about football. His favourite player, Benzema, scored two. Hazard got a jog out and they just about hung on for the win. And by the way, Borja Mayoral, if you score a goal, celebrate. No one cares about your hand wringing, mate. It's your job. Atleti were beaten by Real Sociedad at the football stadium, formerly known as Anoeta, with goals from footballers formerly known as the boy genius Martin Odegaard, and just clear at Monreal. So Sevilla atop, thanks to Joan Jordan's free kick. Espanyol finally scored a goal, and Facundo Ferreira was so excited he popped a hamstring. And we'll talk about the not-so-dirty dozen. 12 red cards in La Liga from 40 matches. At this rate, we'll reach 114 by the end of the season. Quiz time. Which La Liga team has scored the most away goals this season? We'll tell you before we get to the end of today's podcast. Terry Gibson is on the line. Terry, I've got one observation from this week's football. Much as I enjoy your company, you need to spend more time in Barcelona.
I'm obviously delighted, as everybody, I presume, who listens to this podcast or watches La Liga, that we've got the ability now to recall games. That's been my biggest bonus of the weekend. I've gone through, you know, pretty much, well, all the games so far, watched most of them in their entirety, and it has been an interesting weekend of football, if I'm being perfectly honest. And it's added to my thoughts of the season so far that we're seeing a strengthening in the teams that we've seen in the past suffer in La Liga. So, as yet, Leganés clearly are the team at the bottom that haven't won a game, haven't picked up a point. But I don't see a team that's going to fall away completely this season and be detached from the rest of the league. So, we've seen some interesting results, and none more so than the Real Sociedad victory over Atletico this week, a team that we were quite rightly lauding in recent weeks for being fantastic. Likewise, Real Sociedad were this week in beating Atletico.
Right, shall we start in detail? Can we do Barcelona-Valencia? 7 goals in that one. And of course, the big story about Marcelino being replaced by Saladez. Does it make any sense to you at all, Terry?
No. First of all, sacking the manager, The way it was done wasn't particularly classy either, that the general manager was summoned to Singapore on Monday and could only tell Marcelino when he got back on Wednesday, even though he knew for 2 days what had happened. It doesn't make any sense from a football point of view. Has it come as a surprise? No, it hasn't. I think we were all fully aware that over the summer, things haven't been cordial between Peter Lim and I think the entire rest of the club, if I'm being perfectly honest. I think I looked at it. It's Peter Lim has been there, I think it's 5 years now. He's on 8 managers. Saladez is the 9th. He's had 3 different presidents and 3 different directors of football. That's a ridiculous amount of people to go through in that short space of time. And in the last 2 seasons, on top of that, they've finished in 4th place, which gets him his Champions League spot. and won the Copa del Rey. And clearly things were going in the right direction. I know there was that the trouble stems from players that Peter Lim wanted to move on and the manager didn't. And then also likewise, I think Peter Lim wanted to bring in players that the manager didn't want brought in. Now, whether that's resulted in anybody coming into the club or not, I don't know. But it doesn't make any sense whatsoever. But it's classic Valencia, if I'm being perfectly honest, and something that I hoped was beyond us now, behind us. And, you know, we were moving on with another genuine team at the top of the table that could really challenge Barcelona, Atletico, Real Madrid, and get in the mix of a title race. Valencia are a big enough club to do that. So it's a shame. And the appointment doesn't make any sense either in the fact it's Solari's first job as manager. I feel sorry for him, if I'm being honest. I think he's like a lamb to the slaughter. It's that the players have shown their displeasure with the treatment of the previous manager, Marcelino. I think, like everybody else, they can see that things were going in the right direction. And for Solari to take over, normally when a manager takes over a club, he comes in for two reasons. The team performing badly and it's time, more often than not, it's time for a change and everybody responds to it. Hence, we get the new manager bounce on a lot of occasions. Or the manager comes in when the previous manager has had a better offer and has left. So there's kind of an understanding on those two situations from the players that, yes, we needed a new manager. The other one's decided to move on to, he thinks, a better opportunity, or things weren't going right. We needed a change. Let's start afresh with a new manager. Solari's isn't either of those situations. He's coming into a club where the players were more than happy with the manager. They were more than happy with how things were going. The manager hasn't left to go to bigger and better things. He wanted to stay. So it's difficult for Solari's on his first job to come in and take control of a big club. It's a massive job, one of the bigger jobs in Europe, and then have to deal with the fallout from players. I noticed the signs in the game against Barcelona. That I don't think they would have conceded five if Marcelino had been in charge. I think there would have been a different game plan. And then when things started to go against Valencia, I think the third goal in particular from Pique, once that went in, there was a kind of, you could see, you know, a disgruntled group of players that then went on to concede two more from Luis Suarez. So it's Barcelona away, Chelsea away in their next game in the Champions League midweek. And then their next weekend, they are at home to Leganés. Now, we know how toxic the Mestalla can be on the back of the decision, the back of the defeat against Barcelona. If they don't get a result against Chelsea, then the atmosphere is going to be toxic next week at the Mestalla when they play Leganés.
Yeah, it's very handy for Chelsea, the timing of this, isn't it? Because Valencia, you can't imagine Valencia being anything other than weakened by all of this, can you, going into the Champions League?
No, it's clearly good news for Chelsea, who are doing pretty good now, scoring goals. It could still be a good game. I mean, players will have their professional prides. They worked hard to get in the Champions League. They worked hard to beat Barcelona in the Copa del Rey final. This might have just been a fallout, you know, from playing a team that was Barcelona are in good form in this game, that played really well against Valencia. It might be something that they've got out of their system. And you know, they might be, I would imagine, a better performance against Chelsea, who, although despite Chelsea doing well at the moment, Chelsea are not Barcelona at this current moment in time. So it's still possible that Valencia can get a favourable result, but there has to be a different mindset from the players. Are they still going to be disgruntled? How is Solari going to react to the performance and the defeat? Will he make changes? You know, you're reluctant as a manager in that situation to make too many changes because that just makes the situation even worse. So, you know, you don't want to come in and start putting your tactical analysis on the team, your tactical system, implement that because you're kind of worried that you don't want to upset the players anymore. So therefore, you're compromised as a coach. So you're tempted just to come in and leave it. But that might not be what you want to do. And you have to be forthright. You have to be the leader. So it's a really difficult situation for a manager in his first, it's his first job. I cannot believe they've gone for someone who's, you know, they're willing to give an opportunity to an inexperienced manager, albeit an experienced person in football. But to give it to a totally inexperienced manager is a massive call.
Jackie Boy says, if ever there was a doomed appointment, this is it. Can't see the players, especially Garay, taking to him. Good point. Shall we move on and talk about Barcelona?
Also, the other thing I'd like to add on that, sorry, John, is the general manager, the director of football. They were on the verge of leaving with Marcelino in the summer when they thought of parting of the ways. I'm actually, the director of football, Pablo Longoria, is a good friend of mine and we keep in touch. And he was worried just 3 or 4 weeks ago that I spoke to him on the phone. He was worried that the whole thing had fallen apart. The project, he called it, had fallen apart. This was based on transfers in and out of the club. Total disagreement between Peter Lim and the director of football, the general manager, the manager, the president. So they thought it was all going to go then. So I would imagine now that the general manager might resign as well, although I think he has to pay Valencia money if he walks out on his contract. The director of football will go. So all these people that probably the players were getting on well with, because things were going in the right direction and everything was going well, they've had a great summer, finished strong in the league, won the Copa del Rey, centenary season, and then it all comes apart at the seams just as the season starts. So it's not just the manager. There could be other fallout from what's happening behind the scenes at Valencia.
Before we leave Valencia, then, what more do you know about the fallout over the players? So why did Peter Lim want different things to happen from the footballing side of it?
Because he's the owner, pure and simple. But in the past 2 years, he'd been more than happy to leave the running of the club on a daily basis to the president and to the general manager. And because he's based in Singapore, he's not at Valencia very much. Despite them doing well in the last couple of years, I don't think he's felt he was popular enough to keep popping back to the club. And he was more than happy to delegate and let people do their jobs. But for some reason, this summer, he's decided to get involved in. I think if we look at the incident, the transfer speculation that nearly happened with Rodri going to Atletico Madrid. That was something that the football people at the club didn't want to happen. And I think that was the big reason why it was suggested at that time that there could be a parting of the ways. Consequently, I think Angel Correa not going to Italy meant that Atletico Madrid couldn't spend the money on Rodrigo. But Rodrigo had already gone to Atletico for talks and medical. Everything was all but done. But for some reason, the Angel Correa move to Milan fell through, which meant they couldn't go through with the transfer of Rodrigo. So it was clear then that there was... But I thought once that had passed, I thought then there might be... You know, a sort of a truce called for the good of the club, for the good of the season, but that hasn't materialised. So it literally comes down to something that for 2 years people behind the scenes have been working together, making good signings, selling the right players. The team's been successful. To suddenly, you know, the owner of the club, and it's his right. He owns the club. I don't agree with it. I don't think it's wise. Most people don't. But as an owner of a football club, it's your prerogative. You can do that if you want to make changes. But it's certainly not for the good of Valencia, I don't think.
Yeah, I don't. I'm not entirely sure. I know if you set up a business or you buy an ordinary business and stuff, but I don't think you've got entire free reign with a football club, have you? It's an institution. It's part of a community. It's a bigger thing than just the person who happens to own it at the moment, given that you wouldn't be surprised if he walked away at any point, would you, Peter Lim? So you're a trustee of a football club, aren't you? It's a responsibility.
Exactly, entirely. To a whole community, not just people based in Valencia, but people around the world that support Valencia. He came charging into the club when it needed saving. So we can't forget that. But I'm interested to see, first of all, what happens with Solares, and then to see what happens in the January transfer window. That's going to be interesting to see how that develops.
Yes. Right, let's just have a quick chat about the game in Barcelona. Of course, I've got lots of Barcelona fans who listen to us. We need to talk about that year 12 kid, don't we, who scored a goal and assisted.
Yeah.
His birthday is the end of October, 31st of October. He'll turn 17. So here's the question. Now, because you're a sensible, wise observer, Terry, I know you'll reserve a little bit of judgment on how good Ansu Fati will be. If you were programming a computer game like Football Manager or FIFA or something, what kind of potential level would you give him? How good are you going to make him?
For every good thing he did at the weekend, and some of it was special, he did a bad thing. But that's to be expected when you haven't turned 17. So in the space of 30 seconds, he gave the ball away cheaply and then took on the fullback and mugged him off completely and made him, you know, look second rate. And that wasn't the case with the fullbacks he was playing against. So it is hard. But I think I hope we can all recognise natural talent. And it is extraordinary what he's doing. To jump from the youth team, football, not playing the B team, and they're still young. And he's completely missed that and gone to the first team at a moment where he's been fortunate to have the opportunity, because if Messi and Suarez and Dembele were fit, we wouldn't still have known about Ansu Fati. So I think it's great to watch. It's hard to keep a lid on it, because what he is doing is special. Just the goals he's scoring, the goal he made at the weekend. But I think there's a player that we'll talk about later on that was probably exactly the same. And I thought was one of the players at the weekend of the weekend's fixtures. And he's only 20. And he probably went through a similar thing. That's Martin Odegaard at Real Sociedad, who signed for Real Madrid when he was 16, played for Real Madrid when he was 16, and has completely been wiped off the face of the earth in football terms for the last 3 or 4 years. And to see him now playing at the age of still only 20, if he was a 20-year-old bursting onto the scene now, you'd go, oh, God, what a player. But I think we expect so much when someone makes their debut at a Real Madrid or at a Barcelona, any level, as a 16-year-old. So it's hard to not get excited about a player that age doing what he's doing. But, you know, we have to be realistic. There is going to have to be a mechanism in place by Barcelona to make sure that, you know, he progresses at the right level, you know, in the right time frame as well. We don't want to see him disappear. He won't be having to play 35, 40 games this season. But it would be nice to see him on the bench, even when the others are fit. When, you know, if Barcelona are winning 3 or 4-0, he can go on for another 25, 30 minutes and continue to progress like that. Train with the first team on a regular basis, as opposed to going back training with the youth team or training with the B team. So there has to be a process in place at Barcelona to make sure he progresses in exactly the way that the club want him to.
And Barca fans will also be encouraged, Terry, by Luis Suarez coming in and showing us that he's still... Well, he hasn't been away long, has he? He only got injured first day of the season. But you know, they miss him, obviously Messi more, in the last few weeks. Good finishes from Suarez.
Yeah, I'm going to stick up for the old fatties. Nothing wrong with an old fatty, John. The surprising element to this is in the last 2 or 3 seasons, Suarez has been a slow starter to the season. Mm. And his performance at Athletic Bilbao kind of backed that up till he got injured. I know he wasn't out there long, but he didn't look sharp. He didn't look pacey. But then when he came on at the weekend, you know, good time to come on. You know, got the third goal, were 3-1 up, but his two finishes were sensational. They were, you know, right from the top drawer. Probably Griezmann being there might fire him up a little bit in terms of competition to be the you know, the number one striker. But he certainly looked fired up when he came on. And let's not forget, he was last season's Clásico, the 5-1. Messi was out injured and he had to shoulder the responsibility and got an unbelievable hat-trick against Real Madrid in the first one. So he's a player that stands up to the test. Two goals as... You know, only on the pitch for 30-odd minutes, two goals against a team that finished fourth last season, you know, reflects the quality that we always have known that Luis Suarez has had. They played well, though, I thought, Barcelona. I thought there was big spells of the game. Having watched Real Madrid just before on the same day, the difference in styles between the two teams, the possession game of Barcelona, how they controlled the game, although, you know, Valencia did still have two or three chances and took one of those on the break from Gamero when the game was still competitive. One or two issues at the back for Barcelona when teams hit them on the counter-attack. But in general, I thought that the midfield looked well balanced. It's tough on Rakitic because when he comes on, he makes some tick as well. You know, we still know he's a world-class midfielder, basically. But it looks to be Busquets, Artur and Frankie de Jong looks to be the three that Valverde is picking at the moment.
Let's talk about Real Sociedad Atletico then. Terry, you mentioned it earlier. You mentioned Odegaard's performance and Nacho Monreal got a debut goal as well. So a bit down to earth for Atletico, wasn't it? I mean, we'd always put a little asterisk by their start to the season anyway, in that, you know, some of the games weren't quite as straightforward as the points tally suggested. But at the stadium that is no longer called Anoeta, apparently, even though it's the same place,
no.
Real Sociedad turned on the style.
Yeah, and it was a club record in terms of attendance for any game at the Anoeta now. The Real Arena, is it? I think that's what it's known as.
Yeah, well,
34,700 supporters. The record was 31, I think, when they played Real Madrid in 2002-03. So surprisingly, it looks a stadium that held more than what we saw at the weekend. It looks fantastic place to watch a game of football now, and the supporters were brilliant. It was, you know, the way they clapped Oblak when he went off injured at the end. I know they were winning and they probably assumed they were going to go on and win the game. But it looks a vibrant place. When I look at Real Sociedad's team, I look at the players that started up front. Odegaard, Alexandre Isak, who looks to be a really good player. Poltu and Oyarzabal. And then you have Januzaj and William Jose come off the bench. And then Zuratuza comes off the bench. So suddenly Real Sociedad look like they're a team that have relied on bringing young players through. And now you're looking at the bench and you've got Januzaj, William Jose coming on. Zuratuza coming on for a bit of experience at the end. They look a really solid team. So I've mentioned on the podcast before, we can't slag off one of the big clubs if they don't win every game, every week throughout the season. Atletico away to Real Sociedad, it's their first home game of the season. It's always going to be a tough game. And it was touch and go. Real Sociedad get two goals in the space of 3 minutes. But they were the better team. They deserved the win. And they are going to be... they're going to be, I was going to say, tough to play against this year. I don't think it's the right description of Real Sociedad. They're going to be exciting to watch, would be a better phrase, I think, with the attacking talent they have, with the young players still coming in. It looks a really good squad. And I think they could do some good things this year, Real Sociedad.
Yeah, lots of good pace and skill in that team. Good to watch, aren't they? Let's do Alaves Sevilla. Because Sevilla are top of the league, aren't they? A terrific free kick by Joan Jordan. I keep saying, when people ask me about Sevilla, I keep saying, it's hard to say, give them time. They've signed, you know, loads more players again. And yet, they've started better than anybody else, obviously, because the points tally says they have.
Yeah, and they've only had one home game, and they drew that. They've won three away games. Jordan's free kick was a brilliant, brilliant free kick. I thought it was going to be the best free kick of the weekend, but it wasn't. But that was a 1-0 thrashing. Honestly, it was a ridiculously controlled game by Sevilla. They just lacked the finishing touch. The young player up front, Hernandez, came off the bench towards the end of the game, which was a slight surprise. But their passing was good. Their movement was good. It was just that final third. They couldn't find that finishing touch. But it was a thrashing, honestly. Alaves irritated me. They brought Manu Garcia on. We know Manu Garcia, the experienced player that's come through the divisions with them, that puts his foot in, that's a good leader of the club. He came on and he was their biggest attacking threat. He had three chances. They lacked any attacking intent whatsoever. And I'm slightly concerned with the changeover from Abelardo to Asier Garitano. There are different players, but the style looks far removed from what we saw from Alaves under Abelardo. That was another manager that was a mystery as why he left Alaves when they were in a good position. He hasn't moved on to bigger and better things either. And I think Alaves will be okay because they're still going to be tough to play against. But as an attacking team at home against Sevilla, they were completely, Sevilla wiped the floor with them. And I can't believe it was only 1-0. It was the biggest thrashing, 1-0 thrashing I've seen for a long, long time. Sevilla were brilliant.
Yeah. And Garitano not got a reputation for producing attacking teams, has he? So let's hope those omens are wrong. Shall we take a little break and we'll come back? We need to talk about Real Madrid, obviously, and all of the red cards that are getting flashed around in La Liga. That's all coming up very soon. Welcome back to Elton and John's La Liga Weekly. We've got a couple of questions about Real Madrid. And they are, JR, will Zizou last beyond Christmas? No excuse for him not to have hit the ground running. Zengreen Yoda, if Real Madrid continue to defend woefully and fail to score, I can see the great Mourinho coming back. You don't have to address those issues directly if you don't want to, Terry. But tell us about Real Madrid 3, Levante 2. Can't complain about a lack of entertainment with Real Madrid, or is that too glossy a view?
No, it was. They're exciting to watch. It was kind of a weird game because they're 3-0 up, and I thought the game there hadn't been that much difference between the performance levels of either team. But Benzema was sharp in front of goal again, and Casemiro gets the third on just before half to make it 3-0 by half time. And you're thinking there's no way back there for Levante. But Real Madrid knock off. They concede an early goal in the second half. Zidane then makes two changes. I think, in fairness, Ramos was an injury precaution. But he can't play against PSG midweek. He's suspended anyway for that game. So when he came off, and Casemiro, both after 60 minutes, the game just become, it was crazy. It was, I don't want Real Madrid to stop playing like that because I want to watch a game of football where it's end to end, it's completely open. So when Levante got back to 3-2, they could quite comfortably have scored three goals in that second half, but Real Madrid probably should have scored seven. But it was just comical watching, they're hanging on with 10 minutes to go. Malera gets a good header at the far post to make it 3-2, Courtois to make a couple of good saves. But I was seeing, at one stage, I saw Marcelo playing as almost a second striker, turning back to Lucas Vazquez, who was out on the left wing, and asking him to go and play left back when the attack broke down. And this is a team that's hanging on to a 3-2 lead at home against Levante. And every time Levante got the ball, they threatened to continue to keep causing problems at the back for Real Madrid. So it's Modric is injured, Fede Valverde is injured. So we've bemoaned the fact that Real Madrid have probably only got four what you would call genuine midfielders that attack and defend. So now they're down to Kroos and Casemiro. Casemiro played after coming back from Brazil and playing on the east coast of America and then flying to the west coast. He wasn't the only player that's done that this weekend, but it was, he was still up and down the pitch. He broke forward to score the third goal for Real Madrid. But I would be concerned if I was a Real Madrid fan that yes, they're going to, completely turn some teams over. Because Hazard looked really good when he came in. He had a fantastic run and dribble. Was unlucky not to score. It was a classic Hazard attack. But they're so fragile at the back. And it's because they at times, they just simply lack numbers in defensive positions. Nothing in front of the back four. Marcelo goes playing left wing and second striker, leaving Vazquez to fill in as a left back. Carvajal's still pushing forward on the right back position. There was no sense of not sitting back and locking the game up and keeping things tight. It just needed a little bit of common sense from the defenders when it got to 3-2 to you know, all right, I'm not going to go tearing forward looking to make it 4-2. First and foremost, I'm going to, you know, make sure my positional play is good. We're not going to get caught out of the back being, because Morales was wasteful. Jose Luis Morales, love watching him play, but if he'd have had one of his better games, he was guilty on probably two or three occasions of failing to pass to a teammate in a better position. He took on the chances himself, was wasteful, didn't score them. And I think Real Madrid were fortunate not to concede the third. But in reflection, it probably should have been about 6 or 7-3 to Real Madrid. So I don't want to see Real Madrid play any different. I loved watching what I saw at the weekend. But do I think it's going to bring success? Probably not. And of course, the Mourinho link this week, his PR charm offensive has been in full flow in Spain. He said that winning the Copa del Rey was his greatest achievement in football. Yes, it was a big achievement against Barcelona at that time. His happiest time as manager was at Real Madrid. So there's not many jobs that are going to interest Jose Mourinho. And clearly, Real Madrid will always be one of those big jobs that he fancies. So I think it's inevitable that at some stage he's going to have a second spell as manager of Real Madrid.
OK, that's interesting. Right, let's crack on and talk about these red cards, shall we, Terry? I did look back. Last season, red cards in La Liga, 31 in the whole season.
Season?
This season, 12 in 4 match rounds. So at this rate, we'll get to 114. it can't go on.
Now, Betis are going to break last season's record on their own.
Yeah, I know. So they had 2 sent off. William Carvalho, when it really mattered, 25 minutes in, and they're 1-1 draw with Getafe. Laurent Moran right at the end. And absolutely crucially for Celta Vigo, beaten at home by Granada. Answer to the question, by the way, most away goals in La Liga, Granada. But really important in their game, in Jorge Sainz, in his first La Liga game, on loan from Valencia, sent off. And then Fran Beltran. Now, I didn't mind him being sent off because I thought that was a bad challenge.
Jorge, I agree with Sainz,
was caught up in this stamping on the Achilles thing that we discussed either last week or the week before. But I thought, I didn't think he was deliberately doing it. I thought he just stumbled into.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And they looked at it again on VAR because he was given a yellow and it was changed to a red on the advice of VAR. The referee having a look at it as well. He's not even looking at the ankle. He just stumbles into the back of the player, catches him on the back of the ankle. The Maxi Gomez one was surprising that wasn't overturned, albeit VAR, because his foul on Longley fitted exactly the description of what La Liga are trying to, excuse the pun, stamp out. That went straight down the back of the ankle of Longley. And I thought that was, in the current climate, going to be a red card, and it wasn't. The Jorge Sainz one, I don't think in any way, he's not even looking down at the ankle. He's looking head height and he just stumbles into the back of the opponent, catches him on the back of the ankle. It's not malicious. He's not trying to go through the back of him to win the ball back. So I thought that was bizarre. And then Fran Beltran, I guess when you go in as aggressive as that with your studs showing, it was a full-blooded tackle. 20 years ago, it wouldn't have been. But now I think that was a foregone conclusion. That was going to be a red. That, again, that was referred to VAR. I think he got a yellow card initially, and then on review, it was changed to a red. So we're getting a slightly different VAR system. Actually, it's a lot different to what we get in the Premier League, and it can be quite confusing for the viewer just watching at home and going, well, is that a penalty? Is that not a penalty? Is that a red card or is it a yellow card? And the only thing that's clear is the offside law. It's the same, and that applies everywhere. But it's a different take on how they're doing things in La Liga. I applauded the decision to cut out that challenge from behind, but Jorge Sainz, his challenge didn't fall into that category. So it was a ridiculous game in the end, you know, to play from the 28th minute with 9 men. They did well not to concede until the stroke of half-time. And then the second half, Yengel Herrera wrapped it up pretty early in the second half. And the competition, as a competitive game of football, it finished after 54 minutes. It was Granada didn't try to score anymore. Celta had no way of coming back. the crowd were resigned to defeat, and a game of football was spoilt in these circumstances.
What was the best strike this weekend? Was it Yangel Herrera in that game, the Man City loanee, or was it Pablo Hervias in the Valladolid in the 1-1 draw with Osasuna?
And John Jordan's Sevilla goal.
Yes.
I thought it was going to be...
That down, but yeah. You've already given a hint that there was a better one.
Yeah, Hervias is an incredible strike. Absolutely. It's hard to blame the goalkeeper. It's travelling at so much pace. It's just underneath the crossbar. It bends and dips and swerves. It's from one of those positions where you're thinking, oh, don't be stupid. You're not going to score from there. And he puts his foot through it, kind of a side foot technique as well. Hence the dip and the swerve and the power he generated was absolutely ridiculous. Yanko Herrera's one was spectacular because it flies into the top corner. Jordan's was a close one towards the edge of the penalty area where he opens his foot up, side foot, free kick, over the wall and under the crossbar. Goalkeeper had no chance. He didn't move on that one. But I think Hervias is the winner this week by a country mile with an absolutely ridiculous free kick.
I've got a little moan about La Liga, Terry. I got a Twitter suspension this week.
Seriously, what?
For sharing for sharing their videos when they weren't showing any TV, any UK TV. They put them on YouTube with a share button. So they're encouraging you to share them. So I shared them, understandably. So they've done the new deal with Premier. So I guess they want to take stuff down. But there's no need to report you for a copyright infringement when they gave you them to share. Outrageous.
Next anyway, time I'm in Spain, I'm going to look for a poster of you around Barcelona. See if this do you notice so now when I go through passport control?
Yeah, so I won't be sharing Pablo Hervias's goal this week on social media. I can't share any goals from Mallorca versus Athletic from Friday night because they worked very hard at not scoring any goals in that game. Two Babas and a junior in that very young Mallorca team. Actually, they're quite good to watch, Mallorca, right? I know it was a goalless draw. And it was
a really good
Kubo. The much talked about Kubo playing as well.
Yep. Oh, it was a terrific game. It was one of the better 0-0s I've ever seen, to be honest. It was strange that both teams were awarded penalties and both teams allowed the substitutes to take them. Understandably, Adairiz coming on. His was the second one after Mallorca had already missed theirs through Abdon Prats, who was. his attitude, it was great to see. He's on the bench. And he's ranting and raving with his teammates. He's performing the role of a manager on the bench. So it must be slightly irritating to the coach that you've got this substitute who's been around the club for a while issuing orders. Then he gets on and then he gets booked for a stupid foul. So his emotions are running really high. I don't want to stop that. And then when they get a penalty, he's the man that grabs the ball first and runs up and takes it, missed the target completely. The wrong person to take the penalty, in my opinion. He was too wound up, too emotional. But I did expect Adairiz to knock ease in, but he was, you know, missed ease as well. It was a really good game. Athletic were... It could have gone either way. And as you said, quite rightly, Mallorca are good to watch. They're not one of these teams. They might find it hard to pick up points, but I don't see them being particularly weak. They've got a fighting chance of staying in the division from what we've seen so far. The spirit is good. They've got quality. But no, it's a really entertaining 0-0 draw.
And I thought Babar Rahman played really well as well. I haven't seen him play for a while.
No. It's always interesting to see players that you kind of hear of. And then when they come to La Liga, you get the opportunity to see them firsthand. So I saw Oliver Burke come on for Alaves as well. I kind of forgot about that one. He came on as a sub for Alaves when they finally started to try and be attacking and get an equaliser. So Baba Rabban comes into that as well. So it's Mallorca, a decent team. Exactly what you'd expect from a team that's got momentum. Spirits are high. This time of the season, you have to make the most of that. They've got some points on the board. And, you know, I think they're in pretty good shape, to be honest. A 0-0 draw against a good Athletic Bilbao team is a decent result. You know, 4 points for Mallorca so far isn't the worst-case scenario. Athletic would be disappointed they didn't get all three, bearing in mind they had the opportunity with Adderes late on to score the winner from the penalty spot. But, no, it's a really good game.
Eibar 1, Espanyol 2, so a positive result for Espanyol. The injury to Facundo Ferreira as he was scoring the goal, then he was replaced by Espan Granero, who scored the second goal, so they came from behind to win. And the only team, as you mentioned, getting points on the board, the only team without the points on the board so far, Leganés, a couple of goals for Villarreal, three goals for Villarreal, obviously, and two for Gerard Moreno, who is La Liga's top scorer, Terry.
Well, the first goal is absolutely, it's a brilliant strike. Chest control, opens it up, side foot, half volley with his left foot. And he's aiming for the top corner, and that's exactly where it ends up, from the right side of the penalty box. Brilliant strike. Pleasing to see him back on form, because he had a tough time last season, as everybody did at Villarreal. And, you know, Villarreal, he got two. Jonathan Silva with an own goal. Leganés, no points. Bottom, one goal scored, seven conceded. It's not looking great for them at the moment. But when I see them play, even in this game, they don't look, you know, particularly bad. It's just when you start the season off in this manner with four games, you haven't got a point. It's hard not to panic, be depressed, be anxious. Somehow they've got to try and go to the Mestalla next week and you know, get a point there at the very least at the Mestalla next week.
Might not be a bad place to go, as you were saying
the mood around. If you can get 20-30 minutes without conceding, then, you know, it might be to their benefit.
Right, we will leave it there. So, I hope you enjoyed your La Liga football this weekend. We'll be back to talk about more, another round coming up. So we will see you for that. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.